Welcome to Everybody A, Everybody Gay,
a queer exploration of Pretty Little Liars.
With your hosts, Speak Pirate, aka Joanna. I'm here, I'm queer, and I have a cat named Spencer.
And your other host, LCO123, aka Vina, a proud member of the Church of Vander Jesus.
Well, here we are, driving Miss Crazy. Is this episode going to drive us around the bend before we get to the end of it? We have three episodes left after this one, and the way this episode chooses to spend its 42 minutes of time is a choice. This episode has the surround sound murder convo in the Hastings house, some great Spencer and Mary Drake interaction, the jailhouse rock sequence, Caleb proposing to Hannah's mom, and Emily and Mona pretending to be a couple. It's another instance of don't ask questions, just hop in and enjoy this wild campy ride.
Yeah, this episode, it almost feels like they're working off of a checklist of like things they wanted to do throughout the series. Like they were like, okay, we want to do like a fake dating thing. We want to do a musical number. We need to like acknowledge the Presria haters. We kind of need to like wrap up a little bit this Mary Drake plot. Like, this episode is functioning in a very bizarre way, and I felt like I was losing my mind a little bit watching it.
This episode, yes, I agree with everything that you said. Back in the days of America's Next Top Model, they would often have like a goofy acting challenge where the model who won would get to be like on another CW show of some kind.
Sure.
So then you would watch that episode of Veronica Mars and they would have like a scene where a top model contestant like very stiltedly played a rental car agency employee or something like that.
Sure.
This episode has that energy to it. It has the energy of like 10 random fans won a contest, and the contest was like, win a pitch idea and we'll like just use it in the show. And so like one person won the pitch idea. They were like, a musical episode. And they were like, we can't do a whole episode. They're like, a musical scene. And then someone else was like, oh, what if Emily and Mona pretended to date, you know? And it was just like, that is the energy that it has. Like a bunch of fans just won a contest for like different ideas, and the ideas just all got, you know, somebody was like, Aria and Presra go salsa dancing. So like all of these things just are present here in this big mixed salad of an episode.
Yes, that is a very accurate description. I think it's an episode that like feels a little bit like, be careful what you ask for, be careful of what you wish for. It definitely, like, we have talked about before how the endgame couples, it seems like all of them get together in this way that's, like, a little bit spiteful on the part of the writers. Like, it's like, are you happy? Look, here, have your Presria. Are you happy? And I feel that way really with all of the couples in this episode. I feel that way with Caleb. I feel that way with Presria. And I feel that way with Emerson. Toby, we can ignore for now because Toby's not around. His wife died and he's just like gone. He's like fishing or not fishing. And it's really fascinating to me. Like, this episode is kind of a giant fuck you to the audience in a way. And I'm so... like, there were so many points in this episode where I was like, what was the motivation behind this choice? Like, what, when they were sitting around in the writer's room pitching this, what was that conversation?
Well, and there is, as the show moves towards its conclusion, we've talked about how it kind of wants to lean on good feelings that you've had about it before. And I feel like there are ways that a show can like, you know, it can hold a sense of nostalgia without just trying to like recreate the same scene you've already seen beat by beat, which is what this is really like, this is really falling into. Like, I think it would be nice if you had like Hannah and Caleb together with an owl hooting. Like, that would be like a nice allusion to like the tent, you know, but like, no, we have to actually get them back in a tent because... reasons, because the Caleb fan won a contest. They were like, we want them to be back in a tent.
And you know what? If they were going to go for it, I want Pink telling them to let a stranger come inside. Like, they probably no longer have enough money to, like, renew the music rights to buy a Pink song. But, like, God damn it. Like, have Pink giving us, like, a play-by-play of Caleb entering Hannah. That's what I want. Oh, boy. Well, shall we start this salsa class?
Oh, my gosh. Okay. Oh, I should. Yeah. For this one, I should mention I have a cat named Salsa as well.
Oh, yes.
So, yeah, both of my cats have names that are featured this episode. So we start this episode with multiple cameras showing Aria and Prezra salsa dancing. I legit forgot that this scene ever existed. Anyway, he is upset afterwards because she didn't seem appropriately into it. But also, he's got his next inexplicable gotta be away situation all set up in that his brother and his mother are arguing about Wes's date for the wedding. Another man might tell them to work it out as adults, but not Prezra, the man who will take any reason to be away from his fiance. He bounces, and Aria sees multiple missed calls on her phone. She dials Avataria and says, "She can't do this. She can't torture her friends." Avataria threatens her with Jessica's file and now reveals that in it, Aria called Prezra a conniving, manipulative predator. Correct! Who had taken advantage of a teenage girl he had power over. Also correct! Fuck Jessica Laurentiis for having this report and never turning it over to the cops. Anyway, Aria of today says, "Well, she didn't turn it in, but she filled it out," Avataria says. "And there's no statute of limitations, so she could be getting hitched to Prezra in jail if she doesn't mess with Spencer next." First of all, there is a 12-year statute of limitations in Pennsylvania. And second, this would all be way more interesting if the idea was Prezra will turn on Aria to save himself as the police close in, which he would 100% do. Mm-hmm. But the idea that the police would care or investigate 6 years later without Aria being willing to help in the investigation is silly. Plus, it cannot simultaneously be a situation where if the police knew, he'd be in jail, but also they're getting married and everything is normal, even though she was his student, like, not that long ago. Anyway, it looks like Spencer is Avataria's next target.
Yeah, this scene is so weird. It's like, why are we bringing up these words and, like, calling out the dynamic between them as directly as we ever have at this point? The other thing is, like, this scene is just, like, salsa dancing around the phrase statutory rape. Like, they are doing everything they can to not say that. I don't know that they ever say that over the course of the show, which was something Kelsey pointed out to me. She was like, "Do they ever say the word rape?" And I was like, I don't think so.
No.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like rape, abortion, and bisexual are like three words that are like banned in the world of PLL, I think.
Yes. Despite the need to say them frequently.
All three of them. Yes.
As relates to the developments on the show. Yes.
Exactly. So it is fascinating. I don't know if this functions almost as a way of saying to the fans who didn't want them together, like, see, we know it's weird. Like, we know it's fucked up, but, like, it's true love. Honey, you just can't kill it, you know? Like, I don't know why it exists. It just makes me, like, it almost makes it worse because it's like they're calling it out so directly.
Well, and they're raising it as, look at this bad, bad thing that you did, Aria. You used these completely correct words to describe your extremely fucked up relationship. Like, ooh, bad. As I said, the way that this episode spends its time is a choice.
Yeah, and it's also saying that Avataria /AD/Mrs. De Laurentiis are, like, evil for wanting to bring this information to light. The other thing is, how great would it be if there was a reveal at the end of the season that Prezra kept rushing off to, like, go hook up with some, like, teenage girl in New York or something?
So many things. Or that he was cheating on Aria with Nicole, which would be, like, a very logical place to take this storyline.
Sure.
But no.
It's also really weird because they bring up Wes a lot in this episode to the point where I was like, I kind of was like, oh, does he, like, show up in this episode or anything? But, like, no, we never see him for the rest of the series, I don't think. He's not in the finale, I don't think.
I don't remember. He's so forgettable.
Yeah, very true. So Emily gets the shush this week. And then after the credits, we see Marco at Hannah's door. Marco, I think that, I don't know if this is an acting thing or a director thing, but I do really like that, like, Marco just feels suddenly so much more menacing in all of his scenes. Like, gone is the sort of good cop veneer. It doesn't feel like he's on the liar's side anymore. It feels like he's being kind of lascivious with all of them. And they're definitely, like, hammering home the idea that he could be A. One of those examples is that he just kind of waltzes in and tells her that the Radley basement was flooded and that a witness saw Hannah and Caleb there. He just is sort of very implying a lot of things without really revealing things. And then there's a very pointed moment when Caleb comes out of the shower and Marco turns to Hannah and says, "It's your turn," which obviously is supposed to invoke the game for all of us. We learn here that Caleb still lives at the Radley, allegedly, which, sure, whatever, fine. Marco says that the flood was staged and that it destroyed crucial evidence. And Hannah very stupidly volunteers the information that Caleb was the one who upgraded the security system, which Marco quickly deduces means that, oh, Caleb could have shut off said security system. We get a mention of Ashley here and the fact that Marco has spoken to her. And then he also says that more evidence has surfaced.
Yeah, this is an interesting scene. First of all, Hannah opens the door in a robe and she's drinking a giant coffee, which made me say, are she and Caleb having some Spencer cosplay?
Ooh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
But also, Marco is not a very astute, like, investigator if he didn't already know that Caleb was in charge of the security system at the Radley.
Yeah.
You know, so that's kind of questionable. But also, I kind of like the idea here. Like, he's saying that new evidence has turned up. Hannah is going to kind of go into a tailspin thinking about what that is. But I actually like the idea, like, police are allowed to lie to you. So I kind of like the idea of Marco, like, based on his interactions with them thus far, like, he's just like, well, they're lying to us all the time. I'm going to start lying to them and see, like, what happens, what comes of it.
And I mean, it works. Hannah completely spins out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's effective for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
So at Spencer's, Emily is wondering why this has to happen today. This being the Hastings needing to get all of their stuff out of their house for the realtor. We learn that Allie is out of town to visit Jason in New York. I mean, naturally, you finally get together with your end game pairing and then immediately leave. Anyway, Spencer is worried that Marco wants to be super cop. Peter needs to figure out where to put his shoes. Emily thinks that everyone should have a, you know, just a yard sale. And then Spencer finds a baby blanket from the Radley that was in the pile for the dumpster. This is interrupted by an SOS from Hannah saying they need to play the game now. My note on this scene is, can you imagine all of the murdery items that would be up for grabs at a Hastings yard sale? Rat poison, never used. Bloody field hockey stick, $2. Fake baby pregnancy pillow, a steal at $5. I wonder if Rosewood has a free cycle page.
I love that. Spencer being like a bastard born in a madhouse or whatever has been like this family secret for 20 odd years. And yet now that it's out there, the Hastings are just like, yeah, your baby blanket. This is just going to be like top of the pile. Not even like hidden, not even anything, like just a blanket. And not only a baby blanket, but a blanket, baby blanket that says like courtesy of Radley Sanitarium on it, as if we really didn't get it. I think that detail is really funny, but I do think like Troyan has a lot of little stuff in this episode that's really good. And I love Emily when she picks up the blanket and Emily asks her, you know, was that in the dumpster pile? And Spencer just kind of goes like, mm-hmm. And there's just like so much pain behind her eyes. It's really good.
And she holds the baby blanket in a way that I feel like, you know, Troyan is always fantastic, and that is a good moment for her.
For sure, for sure. But yeah, it's like Peter is just gonna like gaslight Spencer into thinking that the adoption, no big deal, that or the not adoption. So weird. Yeah. So Hannah is ranting and raving about Marco and the evidence and how they need to finish the game. She is also suspicious about why Arya hasn't had a turn. And I think that this is like a sort of good sign for the episode that we're not that many minutes in. We already have a full liars meetup, minus Allison, but including Mona, who waltzes in, happy to be there. The liars are super mean, as always. And Hannah, who definitely should have prepped them and Mona for this, announces that Mona knows about the game. Mona has theories starting with Jenna Marshall and ending with Mary Drake. She points out that she is an accessory and she will not be leaving her fate in their fumbling little hands. I do just like the way that Mona will walk into a room and the liars are so mad, but like there's really nothing that they can do.
It's true. It's true. I really love the way that like Hannah brings Mona in and she's like, I'm bringing her in because she's brilliant and she'll be able to figure this out. And then, like, all the other liars are like, we hate this. We're going to be mean. And then as soon as Mona is like, hey, I'm involved in this crime, too, and I'm not leaving my fate in your hands, like, that makes Spencer so much more comfortable because Spencer is used to seeing Mona in an adversarial role. So once again, just, like, brilliant strategy on the part of the Vander Jesus. Also, I love how uncomfortable Arya looks about Mona's involvement.
Yeah.
Just because Arya is like, oh no, Mona is going to figure me out in like 2 seconds. Which, valid point, Arya, valid point.
This is a great episode for the Vander Jesus.
Oh, 100, 110%. So Caleb is at the Radley and he runs into Ashley. Ashley is like, let's talk somewhere where there's a little less traffic, and pulls him like away from like directly in front of the elevator that people are getting on and off of to like maybe like 2 feet away from that location. It still seems like a lot of people are around to be talking about like a police investigation, but you know, it's the liars. So what are you going to do? She wants him to look her in the eye and tell her that Hannah is not in any trouble. He does so, but not super convincingly. Also, if anyone out there is a Caleb Ashley Marin shipper, this scene has vibes.
Oh, this whole episode has vibes. Like, Ashley has a sassy new haircut, and, like, she looks great. And there's just, yeah, there is definitely a vibe.
There is something in the way that Caleb is looking at her here that is just not, like, yeah. I mean, something there.
I wonder if Tyler was just like had a crush on Laura Layton or something, because there's something there.
There's some energy.
There's energy. Yeah, there's definite energy. And that won't, like, that energy will just continue. Mm-hmm. Yes. So Spencer and Veronica are packing up when Arya walks in with about 1,000 giant bags, lying about bringing them dinner. Spencer is upset about Mona knowing about the game. Arya sets up some device that she's like connecting a phone to a Bluetooth speaker and then like very quickly gets the fuck out. A tape starts playing as soon as Arya leaves and it is a conversation. Peter is confronting Mary about killing Jessica and threatening to maybe kill her. In real time, Peter freaks out about Mary and storms downstairs. He starts breaking things and running around looking for Mary, screaming about the tape. Veronica and Spencer just kind of look around nervously, seeming to wonder what is going on.
Oh my goodness. First of all, great cover, Arya, to bring the Hastings dinner. Although, like, the Hastings don't eat. Like, they run on, like, coffee, murder, and spite. Like, so,
yes,
you know, good luck with that. Also, one of the things that I think is so consistently enjoyable of the Arya Avataria arc is,
yeah,
how many times Arya bounces with like a totally weak pressure related excuse and the liars are just like, they don't even, it just seems very normal to them.
Yeah.
You just get the sense that that's absolutely how it is all the time. Anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, hilarious that no one flags it as strange because she's literally always running off to do Prezra's bidding. Then I also really enjoy like the level of unhinged rich white man that Peter brings when he comes crashing downstairs and like the conversation is playing all around him and he's like,
yep,
knocking down, like, there are so many like weird like I have a lot to say about, like, the decor in people's homes in this episode. Like, the Hastings live in a place where, like, people are constantly, like, burying bodies in the backyard and, like, it just seems like you should have less breakable wares, like, around your place. But yeah, love that. Also love that, like, he's crazed and he says, like, this is what happens when you let anyone in the house. Well, they haven't let anyone in the house yet. That's the whole thing. They're emptying it out because this, like, apparently dominatrix realtor that they've hired has told them that they must. And despite the Hastings being rich white people who could either hire another realtor or tell the realtor no, they're just all acting like, oh, well, we must box up all of our belongings post-haste.
Yeah. 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 It's an interesting, it's like a sort of an oddly paced scene too, because, like, you don't really know what's happening.
And it, like, it has, like, different parts to it. It has the part where Arya is there, then it has the part where Arya is outside, then it has the part where, like, Spencer's alone in the room, then her parents come in, Peter is flipping out, Peter runs outside, and then we're gonna have another little scene, like, when Peter is back inside. So there's just a lot. I really like the kind of, like midpoint ending where it goes to commercial break when, like, Veronica and Spencer are still in the house and the conversation is still playing around them. I like that, like, Peter has run out, but, like, the evil deeds of Peter are still, like, echoing in space around the two of them.
Yeah, I completely agree. I completely agree.
So after the break, Peter returns to the house with the news that Mary was not to be found in the yard. First of all, the Hastings yard is, like, 15 acres big. I don't know why he thought she was just, like, hanging out in the yard, but that he's gone. He searched the yard. Whether he found any other women out there and fucked them on sight is not known. Veronica wants to know who recorded that conversation. He's like, who can say? It was 100 years ago. And Spencer quietly points out, six. It was 6 years ago. Love this detail. Also, Spencer clearly understands that he was trying to kill Mary, although he rants and raves and blames Mary's, you know, mental illness. Veronica either believes him or wants to call his bluff because she picks up the phone as if she is going to call the police. And Peter is like, nope, look, let's not, please don't. His pleading is as good as an admission. Veronica's like, but someone broke into our house. Then Spencer also asks her not to call the police. And Spencer and Peter share a look of, like, adversity in the midst of complicity. Veronica is pretty unhappy at the realization that she is the only one in this house who has not recently been involved in a murder plot.
That we know of, honestly.
Agree.
Yeah, I really like this scene a lot. I love that it opens with Veronica sweeping up the whatever fancy glass thing Peter just broke, because it feels like it's such a symbol of the way that she's just constantly cleaning up after him and just sort of Veronica's silent labor, which will in a big way be a part of the end of this episode, the way that she, like, what she has to sacrifice to sort of keep this family together. I really like Spencer quietly asking her mom to not call the police, and how we see, like, we see these fracture lines in this family and how, like, Spencer's request lands in a completely different way than Peter's request landed. And I just, the sort of dark triangle of this little family is really, really interesting.
I totally agree. Also, I feel like the Peter Veronica, like, I don't know that Veronica would ever genuinely call the police in this situation, but I feel like she and Peter were kind of playing their Mr. and Mrs. Smith games together, and then when Spencer's like, no, mom, please don't call the police, then Veronica, like, all of a sudden is like, oh, no.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Emily is on the phone with Allison. They are at the De Laurentiis house. She's at the De Laurentiis house with Mona. She's wishing her good night. And when Mona calls over to tell Emily to tell Allison to take her folic acid, which Emily doesn't seem to know what that is, which is concerning to me since Emily is allegedly invested in this pregnancy. I just love Mona. I also love that after Emily hangs up, Mona makes a very cute remark about how Emily can say that she loves Allison in front of her. That hasn't been a secret since Brownies, which I just, there's just something extremely heartwarming to me about the idea of like little Mona watching little Emily be in love with little Allison, you know?
I want that fic. Like, I want the fic where the three of them are in Brownies together. Give it to me now.
So sweet. So Emily, as always, is very suspicious of Mona's motives and why she's here. Mona announces that she knows the name of the fertility doctor who bankrolled Allie's procedure. She has set up an appointment for the two of them to go speak to this fertility doctor tomorrow as a couple. Oh my God. I love this. I love Mona getting information and using pretending to be a couple with one of the liars as her way of doing it. And I also feel like, you know, the show is so weird about Mona's queerness and like sort of plausible deniability of Mona's queerness. But this to me feels like another moment of them being like, no, like, come on guys, like Mona's queer.
Yes, I absolutely agree. I also am in love with the detail that she like kind of gives Emily a once over. Emily's wearing in this scene like a faded t-shirt and jeans. And she says like, dress appropriately.
Yes.
Dress like you're someone I would consider dating, as if Mona hasn't like considered this, like with all of the liars, like,
times, with, you know, her paper dolls. So I have to share a funny anecdote about, because I once again watched the episode with Kelsey, and at some point in the episode, I think it was in a later scene, Kelsey just kind of idly went, Mona should be a lesbian. And it like activated something in my brain. I had no control over it. I just looked at her and I said, Mona is a lesbian. The show just isn't brave enough to say it. And she looked at me like, whoa, okay. I was like, I don't know where that came from, but it was like in me.
It was like a reflex. It was like when they hit your knee at the doctor.
Yeah. It was. It was just like with a ferocity that I didn't know I possessed. I had to see that.
We're within four episodes of the end of the show. So like we've just internalized a lot of our headcanons. That's
exactly
just the facts. We've spent a lot of time ruminating on the interior lives of these characters.
So much time. Some might argue too much time.
What?
No.
Okay, so Caleb and Hannah are eating cake at the Brew, while Hannah worries about lying to her mom and about what other mistakes they all might have made. Prezra horns in on their convo to moan about his man pain and his family troubles. He has been involved in planning this wedding for 2 seconds, and already we are at like man pain level 10. He talks about wanting to elope to a Tuscan villa. Hannah and Caleb are like, oh, we want to go. Arya comes in, but does not want to interact with anyone, to the point that even Prezra is like, well, that was super weird.
Yeah, I just, the way that Prezra just like sits down and is just like, let me tell you my tale. Listen to what I have to say. But also, the other thing is like, Hannah is in ranty, angry, anxious Hannah mode this entire episode, which is like not terribly interesting. Like it's just, it feels very samey. And every scene between her and Caleb, like maybe except for the end, like you would think that a couple, you know, that has like come back together during all of this, like that they would be very much on the same team and sort of working together. And they are just fighting constantly.
I feel like this episode, there is an unspoken element to it of like what you were saying, where we'll give you the endgame couples, but we'll do it in like a, you know, fuck you kind of way. But this episode really like is making sort of plain like, well, what happens when you get back together, but you don't actually like work out any of your problems? Like when you reconcile, but like all of the issues that drove you apart still exist in their exact same form. You don't like process them. You don't move past them.
Yeah.
They just like still exist like a pile of dirty laundry on the floor that's just getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And I feel like we definitely have that with Prezria in this episode. We definitely have it with Haleb, and we also have it like with the whole Hastings melodrama that's happening over in their plotline.
Well, it's sort of like the Hastings marriage is like what these other couples are going to eventually turn into, because that's a marriage where it's like, it's just constantly the same thing over and over and over again.
Yeah, I love your calling out the detail of like Veronica is like sweeping up the mess that Peter made. And I feel like, and again, that is a choice. Like maybe she leaves that on the floor until he comes back in and Peter gets to clean it up his damn self for once. But no, no, Veronica just like instinctively, silently, habitually is just doing that.
Yeah, absolutely. A couple that is a lot more fun than any of these other ones is Emily and Mona. They are begrudgingly on Emily's part, delightedly on Mona's part, holding hands in this office. Mona says that they've been talking about kids since their very first date. Nice lesbian detail there, Mona. It's so fun because Mona is just having such a good time playing this part. Emily wants to be anywhere but here. She's just like turning away, you know, staring out the window. They kind of play act for another minute or so talking to this doctor before bringing up Allison and the unusual arrangement that this doctor was a part of. He quickly cottons on to the fact that they are not here for some lesbian baby making. They are, in fact, here to investigate. And Mona has a great line where she says, "People do things for all sorts of reasons." He invites them to leave. I really wish that, like, this whole scene had been, like, 10 minutes longer. Like, I would have watched another 10 minutes of, like, Mona trying to, like, sell the love story of her and Emily while Emily looks like she wants to vomit. And, like, this doctor just being none the wiser.
Also, Emily is dressed appropriately. She's dressed like a war widow. She's dressed, all in black, like, kind of a gothic sort of crow look going on. But yeah, Mona is so delighted. And
yes,
like, you get the feeling like that if the scene had been 10 minutes long, that Mona would have had at least that much material about their background and trajectory as a couple. Like Mona,
absolutely.
Mona could like give that to you with very little prompting.
Yeah, I agree. It's so great.
So in a confusing segue, Hannah is somewhere peeking into a structure, shack, shed, cabin situation. A hand reaches for her shoulder and we see a police or park ranger asking if he can help her. We are about to, like, later we're going to learn that this is like a utility shed and that this is a park ranger. But it seems like maybe there was like some intermediate scene where like we learned that Hannah had a plan to like go back to the area where Rollins had been buried or something, like in search of this evidence that Marco had mentioned. But yeah, so without any of that context, this is just like a weird, Hannah's looking in a window and a hand grabs her.
Yeah, it's also a weird thing where like they just need Hannah to have something to like focus on and freak out about. And so they've kind of just like plucked the shovels out of thin air. That like nobody's talked about since that episode.
Well, yes, we've had episodes recently that have featured a lot of MacGuffins, and so here, the shovels are the MacGuffin of the Hannah plotline this week.
Yeah, they are. So Emily and Mona are in the elevator, and they should be kissing. Like that seems like the logical end to this little caper that they've been on. Emily is grumbling that they didn't find anything, and Mona produces a magazine that she stole from the waiting room, and on the magazine is the home address of the doctor.
Yes. I love when Emily's like, oh, that plan didn't work. It was so dumb. And Mona's like, some plans take longer to execute than others, which is like, you know, how Mona is going to be like Allison's second wife and, you know, maybe like Hannah's first wife, you know, like,
yes,
is just, she's playing a long game that Emily is just not like totally able to perceive. I love a Mona plan.
Oh yeah. And what I love is like Mona has like multiple plans spinning at the same time, which is great.
At the unnamed park location, it transpires that Hannah was looking for shovels. She has like an elaborate story about her car having gone off the road and needing to be dug out specifically with a shovel? Don't ask questions, just vibes. The park ranger has no shovels anywhere in the park, and mentions that all of his were confiscated by the police. Hannah vanishes into thin air at the stress of this statement.
So Spencer is continuing to poke around the Hastings' various moving boxes, and she finds the burner phone that played the message.
Which leads us to Spencer and Aria on the phone. Spencer is talking about the blow up in her family, how Peter may have been involved in Jessica's death after all. Her mom is a wreck. They all think that Mary Drake is behind it, but Spencer thinks that Mary's letter was so affecting. How could this be the same person who would then like bring all of this bad stuff? Well, Spencer, people are not just one thing, despite the way the show makes it seem all the time. But Spencer, what she wants to do is she wants to tell Veronica about the game. And Aria freaks, telling her no, under no circumstances. Mona is going to figure this out. Spencer thinks that Mona would rather see them all behind bars. Aria says, well, she saved them before. And then she has to hang up fast because Prezra enters the room. I really think that this is so interesting because we just saw the scene and we just talked about it where I think that Veronica was doing a fake out with Peter of like, well, I'm going to call the police.
Yeah.
5, 4, 3.
Yes.
Confess to murder, honey.
Yeah.
So we just saw Veronica kind of playing that game. And the moment that Spencer finds the phone in that box of books, I feel like you have it like in your head. Like, is Spencer suspicious of Aria?
Mm-hmm.
During this conversation, while Spencer's like, I think I might tell my mom about the game. And then Aria like instantly starts kind of Peter Hastings all over the place.
Sure.
Do you feel like in this conversation that Spencer is suspicious of Aria?
I think that Spencer, maybe a little bit. I think Spencer's very in her feelings here, and Aria is kind of, you know, team Sparia. Like, Aria's kind of the one she goes to in those moments. But I also think, like, Spencer found the earring in the nursery, you know, the last episode. Like, I think that Spencer is observing, like, some odd behavior from Aria. I mean, Aria apparently, like, called her, like, 6 times or something before this scene. So I've got to believe that Spencer is aware that there's, like, just something a little bit off with Aria. I also just want to say that, like, I love the way that Aria is styled in this scene and for a lot of the rest of the episode, and the way that Lucy is playing her. Like, her hair is kind of up in this haphazard way that Aria doesn't usually wear her hair. Her outfit by Aria standards is, like, subdued. And there's really just this sense of, like, her anxiety is so palpable. Like, every smile doesn't reach her eyes. She's just sort of vibrating a little bit. Like, you can just see that this is just eating away at her. And I think that they do a really good job of showing that in through visual cues.
I 100% agree. And I also love the fact that that also doesn't strike any of the liars as particularly weird, because Aria is in this constant horrible toxic situation with Prezra.
Yeah.
So it's like, oh, well, yeah.
Yeah, that tracks. That tracks. Yeah. Well, it's really interesting how, like, everything with the Avataria stuff, like, it is functioning in this way that is making Aria act like she doesn't want to marry this man that maybe she doesn't want to marry. You know, maybe her inner voice, her Avataria voice, is telling her, this isn't a good idea. Remember this police report that you almost filed? Remember how you maybe don't really trust this guy? Like, pay attention to that.
Yeah. Love that.
Yeah. Speaking of which, do you want to take the Prezra scene or should I?
Oh, I, you know what? You had a ton of Prezra last week, so I will happily take this.
Okay.
Upon Prezra's entrance, he wants to play a song for their first dance. Aria is in no mood to dance or even to sway. He immediately goes into a spiral of more man pain, certain that Aria is having doubts about him and about how he once took advantage of her and her friends for the sake of a book. Dude, she dated you again, even after that, only because you got shot. So again, like, we get back to the, like, what do you do when you don't resolve any of those issues and just decide, like, well, I want to have sex with you on a stove, so that's what we're going to do. She is forced to reassure him, no, no, you're a perfect person, etc. He hugs her, and she looks miserable. And to this I say, Arya is always going to be in this exact relationship with him, where Prezra takes up all of the air, where he tells her how she's feeling instead of asking or listening to her, and where forgiveness for him is a requirement, where it must be instantaneous and unquestioning and full-hearted, but where she can't even tell him her problems. She cannot even mention to him, this man that she's going to spend the rest of her life with, that she once filled out but did not submit a police report about his legitimately abusive conduct, because the forgiveness imperative only applies to him. It is an absolute one-way street.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And Arya looks, I mean, she looks like she feels sick in this scene. Like, it's really something. Also, clearly they couldn't, like, shell out the B26 money and have that be the song they would dance to. It's just, like, some, like, random nameless pop tune here. Yeah. Yeah, no, I think that that's totally true. And it is so telling that, like, there's just so much distance between them at this point.
You know what I would have really liked? I would have really liked if it was a Patsy Cline song. And if he were just, like, that evil or that oblivious.
That would be amazing. Like, the one that they were tormented in the dollhouse with. So Spencer, she's either getting out of her car. I guess she's about to get into her car outside the Hastings house when she sees Marco pulling up. They have this very sort of film noirish exchange where she accuses him of stalking her. He starts making comments about her and Caleb and brings up the night in the elevator, this absolute creep of a man. She calls him out on his trouble separating the personal from the professional. He kind of makes some vague references to her being embarrassed and asks if her interest in him had anything to do with wanting a cop in her corner. She advises him to save this line of questioning for his office. She is not the one who will be embarrassed when they have that conversation. That kind of gets him to get in his car and speed off. She gets into her car and surprise Mary Drake. It's an incredible moment. She just, like, rises up from the back seat like a vampire, puts a hand over Spencer's mouth and just goes, drive. It's so good.
It is so good. Also, it seems like, I don't think Marco was just pulling up. I think that Marco had been, like, kind of staking it out. Like, he was, like, sort of waiting for Spencer out in the dark night. I love the idea that, like, Rosewood's finest is, like, in their car waiting to ambush Spencer, and they don't even know that wanted fugitive Mary Drake is hiding in Spencer's backseat. Like, classic, classic moment there, Marco.
Yeah, yeah. Ugh, God, I know.
They're also doing a really weird thing in this episode. I don't, like, the way that Marco describes, like, he's just learned about the Spencer-Caleb relationship, and he's like, I didn't know that you and Caleb Rivers had once been more than friends. And it's like, what? Why aren't you just calling him her ex? That's very, I don't know. It's a weird vocabulary choice, I feel.
Yeah, it's strange, too, that, I don't know. It's another thing where it's like the Rosewood PD are so bad at this. Like, they wouldn't have known that. It's not like that was ever kept a secret.
No, it's just, yes, it's super, super weird. Also, I really, one of the things that I love about Troyan's performance in this kind of stretch of episodes is that now that Spencer knows that Mary Drake is her biological mother, I feel like Troyan's line delivery gets a little more Mary Drake-ish. Like, when she's like, I'm not the one who'll be embarrassed. I feel like she's really channeling Mary there.
Yeah, I totally agree.
So Mary Drake has Spencer drive to the Lost Woods, which again is not under any kind of police surveillance. She and Spencer talk in the car about how Spencer's afraid of her, how she did not plant the phone in the Hastings house. She didn't even know that call was being recorded at the time. But hilariously, she did hear what the call was while she was, like, lurking around outside. So, LOL, Peter searching the yard frantically for her. And Mary obviously just, like, put her invisibility cloak on and, you know, stepped into the shadows. we get a flashback into an interaction between her and Peter in the Hastings house when Jessica comes in, and we learn, like, just through, like, veiled implications that the two of them were planning to kill Mary, but she intercepted their plan and kind of turned it around on them. She and Jessica both have the same medical conditions, so it's kind of implied that, like, whatever pills they were going to use to kill her, kill Jessica instead. We don't ever really learn more about this. I mean, I imagine it's some kind of, like, you know, like, which tea is poisoned, you know,
yeah,
or something. But she then tells Spencer how not knowing Spencer is her biggest regret. She says that they can remedy that. She does well living under the radar, off the grid. Spencer has the detective breathing down her neck. What if she lived with Mary for a while? Oh my goodness. Someone write this fic of Spencer and Mary on the run together. I need it. We get a nice shot of their two haunted faces in the side mirror of the car. And I love this moment of Spencer having a chance to escape the game. I think that would actually be like a super compelling plot. Like, what if all the liars were given a different chance to opt out? Like, who would take it? Who yeah. would not? Would even Emily be vulnerable to that temptation now that there's a rape baby in the mix? I feel like these are all really interesting questions.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think it's, you know, I like the line that Mary has, wouldn't it be nice to finally be free? But I also just, I think that, like, obviously this Mary Drake storyline is, like, very thin, right? But I think that Troyan and Andrea Parker are doing a really good job of selling the idea that, like, these are two people who just feel some kind of connection with one another beyond just the biology of it all, beyond the whole sort of biology is destiny crap on this show. Like, this sort of cosmic, like, something in me understands something in you thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that there's, it's really fascinating because it's, it feels completely different than any time Spencer would share a scene with Jessica, even though it's the same actress. There's something very specific about this Mary Spencer connection. And it feels like it's showing us shades of Spencer that we've never really gotten to see on the show before, because it's a really different kind of familial relationship for her.
Yeah, I totally agree. I also, like, watching this scene, I felt like when Mary Drake talks about, like, freedom, it's like, you know, to quote Janis Joplin, like, freedom's just another word for nothing left to lose. Like,
yeah.
Mary lives a life where there's nothing left to lose. Spencer still has quite a few things.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, it's also interesting when you think about the ultimate end game of this going to be Mary and Alex kidnapping Spencer. And it's like, here is Mary giving Spencer the opportunity to make that choice on her own.
Yeah.
Yeah. So just a very quick little moment here. Arya gets a congratulations text from A. And do you want me to just take this Caleb scene?
Go right ahead.
Okay, so Caleb is setting up dinner at the loft when Hannah comes in, so mad about the shovels and the evidence, and this just really isn't very fun to watch. In walks Ashley, who, like, maybe is coming out of the bedroom where she and Caleb just hooked up. I'm thinking it's a very weird moment. It's like, surprise Ashley. They embrace. Hannah spins a quick lie about having detailed Lucas's car, since that's what she was ranting and raving about earlier. And she lets us slash Ashley know that Emily has sort of moved in with Allison. Ashley would like to know what exactly is going on between Hannah and Caleb, what's permanent, where this is going. Caleb says that he is here because he needed to figure some things out. And it's an interesting moment because something sort of shifts in his face, and whether he's spinning this tale for Ashley or realizing something in the moment, he starts talking about how he feels about Hannah, how it would have been a disaster if either of them had ended up with other people, and he would have spent the next 50 years of his life regretting that decision. He says he can't imagine his life without Hannah in it, and then he proposes to her through Ashley. He says, Mrs. Marin, I want to marry your daughter. It's very weird. Hannah's eyes fill with tears and she smiles, but she doesn't say anything. And Ashley, having seemingly decided what Hannah's answer will be, announces that it is time to toast. I feel very weird about this whole proposal situation.
Okay, so let's just start with the recently reunited endgame pairing of Caleb when Hannah walks in, like, she says that her phone went dead. So, like, in the wire world, if someone is unreachable on their phones for a while, it seems like, oh my gosh, have they been kidnapped? Have they been taken into police custody? Like, when they walk in, it seems like, you know, you might, like, greet them with a hi, honey, or I'm so glad you're back, I was worried, or even the salient point of, hey, your mom is here, but save Hannah from, like, going into this whole rant about the crimes that they're trying to cover up. But no, like, his first words are like, where have you been? You didn't answer any of my texts. Like, like, if that were the welcome that I got, I would not feel super good about it. Also, when he gets to the end of this and he says, like, Mrs. Marin, if he had said Mrs. Robinson, I just feel like that was where that whole speech was, like, really, really headed.
Mrs. Marin, I want to marry you. I mean your daughter.
Well, plus, like, God, when he's, like, he also talks about Hannah and he says, like, they drifted apart for a while. No, you broke up. Like, you broke up pretty ruthlessly. Like, you took all of your stuff and, like, left her apartment and left your phone on the table so she couldn't talk to you ever again. Like, we drifted apart. This is a real interesting hand wave there. And also when he's, like, you know, I would have spent the next 50 years regretting that I let the best thing that ever happened to me get away. Well, you guys are inevitably headed for divorce, so you'll get to do that anyway, Caleb.
Yeah, exactly. I also like that it's sort of this vague, like, we drifted apart. It's like Hannah was going to marry somebody else. Like, it's also just, like, it's very, like, they've never talked about getting married. Hannah, you know, like, Hannah hasn't even said, like, if she feels like she wants to get married or if she feels like being engaged kind of showed her that maybe she didn't want to get married. Like, I guess that they had that, there was, like, allusions to a conversation that they maybe had about having children at some point. But it's just very weird. And it's, I'm going to get on my soapbox here about public proposals, but I really feel very, very, very strongly that if you and your partner have not discussed whether or not you were planning to get married, you should not be proposing to them in front of somebody else. I mean, in general, I think you should probably not ask that question unless you already kind of know the answer. But especially if other people, such as, oh, I don't know, your future maybe wife's mother are present, like, don't go there. Just don't go there. It's so easy to not go there.
Especially if it kind of seems like you're proposing to her mother instead.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Especially if you and your girlfriend are just, like, constantly squabbling.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, where is this going to end? Is this going to end with, like, Hannah divorcing Caleb, marrying Mona, and then later Spencer, while Caleb has, like, a torrid lost weekend with Ashley? Maybe so. Maybe so.
A torrid lost weekend with Ashley, and then, like, finds his way back to the cabin to not fish with his bro Toby.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yes, this is the future liberals want.
Oh my gosh. I actually think that you should probably take this next scene as well.
Are you certain?
I really am. I really am.
What a gift. What a friend. What a friend you are. Because this is the most amazing scene that I had completely forgotten until it started playing. Kelsey, as soon as it started up, she said, I forgive this show for everything it has ever done. So the scene begins. We are in black and white. Aria is a prison bride with a toilet paper veil and flowers. And suddenly Mona is there, looking amazing and dressed as a cop. And we're sort of in this, like, almost cell block tango-y kind of minimalist jail set. Mona starts to sing Jailhouse Rock. She sounds great. And we see that Prezra is here in a prison jumpsuit. And he is just, like, being beaten up and, like, moved around by these, like, prisoners slash dancers. They're like punching him. He's bleeding. Arya's trying to get to him, but like she can't really get to him. It is so incredible. I love that this is what Arya's brain is conjuring. Eventually, she makes it to Prezra and they limp their way up the stairs where Veronica Hastings is waiting in a jumpsuit. Arya begs Veronica to forgive her. And Veronica has the most incredible line of all time. Forgive you? Oh, honey, you're a selfish little bitch. I wouldn't piss on you if you were on fire. Wow. Oh my God. What an amazing line. Incredibly, incredible delivery on this line. Like, just, oh my God. Best line of the episode, hands down. Well, you're just a selfish little bitch. I wouldn't piss on you if you were on fire. I don't know. Also, I don't think like we've ever heard them use like the word piss on this show. Like, it feels very like hard.
We have seen Arya be on fire before.
We have seen Arya on fire before. This Arya is on fire. Yeah, it's so good. I love it so much. This is another scene where I'm like, I wish this went on for another 10 minutes. If this episode had just been Mona and Emily as a fake couple and then Arya's jailhouse Mona-related dream, I would have loved it. Unfortunately, though, Arya wakes with a start. She's on the couch. She and Prezra are, of course, watching a black and white movie. And she gets a text from AD that her reward is downstairs.
I really love the idea of, why didn't we ever get like a Mona perspective bottle episode where it was just like Mona going around and dealing with all of the liar drama. I love the sound effects every time Prezra gets punched. I was so here for that.
Yeah.
Also, I agree that the toilet paper, flowers, and veil are likely because this is a prison dream sequence. But, I mean, Arya wears, like, forks for earrings. So I'm not saying that these are not on her Pinterest, like, look board for the wedding.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little avant-garde. It's, you know, maybe a little more cost-effective. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but yeah, great scene. Love Mona singing. Also, I love the delightful sequence that kind of ends this of Arya looking everywhere in the brew with like some real party hat energy while trying to like appear not suspicious.
Oh, it's so incredible because it's just like this like tiny little woman like poking around frantically. It also just like makes the brew like, because you see all this decor of the brew and it's just like, oh my God, like typewriters and Ezra's book, and it's like Jesus Christ.
I wish that every book at the brew was actually his book. Like, they all had like different covers. Whenever you opened it, it was always,
it's like, just like surprise.
Surprise, it's Ezra's book again. Yeah, I also really just like the idea that, like you were saying, this is what Arya's mind is conjuring. Like, that, like, you know, you are everything in your dream. So her brain has put together the sequence of, like, Prezra being beaten to a bloody pulp and of, like, Veronica Hastings saying that she wouldn't piss on her if she was on fire. So, yeah, excellent. No notes. And Mona is the sexy prison guard with, like, the baton that she's wielding quite freely here.
Do you think, I mean, I feel like there's an argument to be made that Arya, like, has cast Mona as the sexy prison guard, and so what's that about? But then also, there's sort of something like a little bit, like, psychosexual about the Veronica thing, too.
Yes.
Yeah, it's quite interesting.
I think that this is a hot take I didn't even know was coming, but I think that this scene is the queerest that Arya has ever felt.
Ooh, interesting. More than tree climbing?
Well, you know, I will point out that she was tree climbing in Spencer's dream, and now we're here in Arya's dream. I just feel like the dream space of the liars is like 100% queer. Like, the junk drawer of their brains is just like a bunch of rainbow flag pins. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. But they're rainbow flag pins, but they're also somehow in black and white at the same time.
Yes, exactly. Yes. Exactly.
So Emily and Mona swan back into the doctor's office, announcing that he suddenly had the money to pay off all his medical loans. Imagine that. They threaten him to find out who bankrolled Allison's procedure, and he says that he never had names. It was all ID numbers. Mona says they'll take it, and I love these two as a team.
Me too, me too. So Spencer returns to the barn and finds Peter and Veronica waiting for her, handing Mary's letter back and forth between them. Peter immediately jumps in, saying everything it contains is a manipulative ploy. And here's the thing, Peter Hastings. You had 23 years to present your side of this case, to give Spencer, in a loving and caring way, the support and the tools to manage and understand her personal family history. You took a hard pass on all of that. You offered her nothing. You tried to keep it a secret. You tried to murder her biological mother. And now, instead of offering anything resembling a coherent explanation about all of this, you're just like, Barry Drake is really bad. Is Peter acting like someone that Spencer can come to, even now, with questions? No, he's yelling wildly and storming around. Spencer asks him about whether he was trying to kill Mary, and he goes to the, I won't even dignify that with a response, until Veronica kind of seconds that and says that, you know, no, she would actually really like to know that also. He then shouts to the rafters about trying to protect his family, read himself, his secrets, and is generally unrepentant. And again, I will just say that when he talks about, like, wanting to protect his family, he knew that Mary Drake existed when the liars were in the dollhouse. Would that have been, like, pertinent information to the police or authorities or anyone trying to find the liars? Did he tell anyone? No, he most certainly did not. He leaves, and Veronica hands the Mary Drake letter back to her daughter and then says that they can unpack all of the boxes. They will not be moving to Harrisburg. She is going to resign her Senate seat. And Spencer protests that her mom had nothing to do with any of this. Veronica says, well, but I'm married to someone who did. You know how this works, Spencer. And Spencer says that Mary Drake didn't put the recording in their house. Veronica asks, well, then who did? And there's a moment in this scene where Veronica says to Spencer, like, some dreams just have to remain just that, dreams. And this moment, you really feel like the walls closing in on Veronica in the same way that the walls always close in on the liars. Like, just when you think you're going to get out, just when you think you're going to get to go on and have the life that you want, then something like this happens. And I also just feel like, Veronica, you could divorce this man.
Yeah. It's like, what is this blood oath between the Hastings where they just, they cannot leave one another. This is a really interesting scene. I really like the way that Spencer is being written to have so much empathy for both of her mothers, in a sense.
Yes.
You know, I think it's very powerful, especially on a show that's like constantly blaming women for the mistakes of men. It's refreshing for Spencer to really be siding with her maternal figures here. And I just, yeah, it's just so sad. And yet the way that Veronica delivers all these lines, there's sort of this sense of inevitability to it, of like, she knew something would happen. She knew that she wouldn't get to live out this dream. And it's, yeah, it's just, it's very sad that this is what she ends up with. And is this this isn't the last time we see Veronica before the end of the series, is it?
That's a really good question. I don't know off the top of my head if we're going to see her again or not. But we know that she does not resign her Senate seat, because we hear about her, I feel like, on The Perfectionists. We hear about her being in the Senate.
Of course. The Perfectionists. You can't forget The Perfectionist updates.
I mean, we wish we could, but.
Yeah. It's a really sad scene. But again, I think that these three actors do what they can to sort of sell this family drama.
Oh, yeah, I definitely agree. And I feel like there are just some nice, like, I mean, this episode is pretty much a mess, but they do try to have, like, some parallels going on of, like, Mary kind of inviting Spencer to, like, run away and leave all this behind, like contrasted with Veronica being like, here I am and here I stay.
I also don't understand why they couldn't move to Harrisburg and her not, like, if they just wanted to leave Rosewood. Like, why is it a thing of if she resigns from the Senate, they can't leave Rosewood?
A great question. I don't know. The dominatrix realtor is just like really insistent. I don't know.
I guess so. Yeah, it's a weird thing. It's a very weird, like, logic thing. But again, all vibes, no plot. So back at the brew, Arya is still maniacally looking for the file, just looking everywhere she can. Finally, she sees a piece of paper tucked underneath a chair. Inside is a puzzle piece. And then she looks over to see a smiling Mona staring after her.
Love Mona. Love her energy here. She's just like waving. She's got this inscrutable look on her face. She's taking a super long time to pour that sugar in the coffee. Like,
yeah,
Mona.
She's staring after Arya in this way where you're like, is she checking her out or does she like have a plan or something?
Yes.
Yeah, that's the answer. Now, question for you. Do you want me to take this Haleb scene so you can talk about Spencer and Mary?
Yeah, that would be okay.
Because nobody wants to talk about Haleb, but you want to talk about Jailhouse Rock, so I'll happily talk about Haleb. So Hannah is stumbling through the woods to a tent. And, you know, it's like when your girlfriend is being, like, stalked by, you know, various figures and, you know, was, like, had, like, a trauma in the woods where she, like, had to bury a body of a man that she, like, vehicular manslaughtered. And, you know, it's just like generally like feels unsafe in the world. Great to take her out to the woods in the middle of the night in a little flimsy tent in seemingly some cold part of the year. We don't really know. Anyway, Caleb says they needed to get out of the hotel. So here he and Hannah are at this tent. She asks if he really meant what he said, or did he just say that to distract Ashley? He says that he would marry Hannah right now. Hannah produces champagne and cigars? A weird, weird choice. Because, like, that's not even really a wedding thing. I don't know what this is about. But she slips the wrapper off of the cigar and slides it onto his ring finger. He does the same, then asks when he can kiss the bride. And they attempt to recreate their teenage magic as they fuck in a tent.
Yeah. That is a choice.
That is a choice. But again, no pink song, so we do not know when the stranger is coming inside.
Well, it's also acting as if, like, so he's like, oh yeah, I couldn't stay at the hotel. The employees were all, like, giving me the hairy eyeball. They're working for Fury. But, like, Hannah lives in Lucas's loft. Like, I don't know why you... Okay, whatever. Whatever. No thoughts, just vibes.
Exactly.
So Spencer has returned to meet with wanted fugitive Mary Drake, who is still hanging out at the property everyone knows that she owns and would basically be the first place a person wanting to find her might check. Anyway, Spencer is not going to go away with her. She does want to get out of this town, but she cannot leave the people in it. Her friends, her parents, especially her mother. She tells Mary that she's sorry, and Mary tells her not to apologize, and then says that Veronica is her mother and Spencer is lucky to have her. Oh my gosh. Can Mary and Veronica murder Peter and live happily ever after, please? Someone write that fic for me. Anyway, Mary asks if Spencer can forgive her. Spencer says she already has, but now Mary needs to forgive herself. I really think that this scene between the two of them is one of the best scenes post-jump because it actually does feel like there are emotional stakes of Mary really wanting Spencer to run away with her. And Spencer, like, a not small part of her also wanting that, but, like, her deciding that, like, no, my commitments and my ties here are, like, too strong. Mary asks if Spencer knows who planted that recording. That's really interesting, because I bet Mary does. But Spencer says no, but she's glad that she knows that it's not Mary. Spencer does not hug her, but clearly wants to. She walks away and then startles at the sound of a twig breaking, signaling that they may not have been alone. The only thing that I would like better about this scene is if Spencer had confided in Mary about the game, because she'd been saying all along, like, I want to tell my mom what's going on. I would really love it if she had told Mary Drake here, knowing that, like, Mary Drake is someone, like, you know, like how Hannah brought Mona in, like, that Mary is someone who might have the skills to, like, help her out.
Yeah. And I do feel like they're threading a pretty good needle here of, like, as much as this show has, like, not a good way of portraying adoption or biological family or any of that, I do think the show is really showing us that, like, Spencer does kind of have two moms here, and they're both important to her in really different ways. And I do really love Mary saying Veronica is your mom, because that must have been very painful.
Yeah. And I love the way, like, the show has been doing, like, it's been engaging in a lot of, like, cheap and not very good tricks to try to, like, ramp up suspense, like, with the whole, like, oh, Caleb and Hannah are doing this thing, but the security system can only be down for 10 minutes, so better, you know, gotta, like, ramp up the tension. And I feel like it actually does something really, like, very simple and effective here, which is, like, Spencer is walking away, and you hear, like, the crack of a twig, and it's like, ooh, were they not alone? And I feel like that actually works, like, much, much better than a lot of the manufactured shenanigans they've had going on.
I agree. I totally agree. And these two actresses are so good in this scene, both of them, you know, their eyes just, like, spilling over with tears. And then, you know, I mean, I'm trying to make the Alex Drake thing, like, have a little bit of emotional resonance. Like, you think about the fact that, like, Mary sees Alex, who has Spencer's same face, but is, like, so much more troubled than Spencer. And that Mary is probably very grateful that Veronica, or that Spencer had Veronica as a mother, in a sense, you know?
Oh, I totally agree. I mean, I feel like there's something to be said about, like, who would Allison De Laurentiis have been if she had been, like, raised by parents who had, like, a regular relationship with each other and with her, like, who just like, loved her unconditionally. And I feel like Spencer, it's also kind of that question, like, who would Spencer be if she hadn't had Veronica? Who would Alex be if she had, you know?
Sure. Absolutely. So this is a very funny moment. Approaching the board is Aria, who I don't know if she was instructed to do this or she just decided, but she's like, if I'm going to the board tonight, I'm putting on the hoodie. I'm doing the whole thing. I'm cosplaying. She slots the puzzle piece into place. I also just love the idea of her being like, I'm doing this. I'm being incognito, but I'm going to put a puzzle piece onto the very tiny puzzle. It's going to be extremely obvious that there's another puzzle piece added, and, like, nobody's going to question why, I guess. She gets a message that her prize is right behind her. She turns around, and the file is tucked into another vase. Lots of vase work in this episode.
I mean, again, I just feel like you don't even have so many, like, glass art objects around when you're just constantly, like, you know, and also, like, in the liar world, like, houses are constantly exploding or on fire. Like, both of those things have happened to the De Laurentiis house before. Super interesting choice with the decor there. But I really, it's true that, like, there's no reason Aria couldn't have just done this as Aria. But she has to go in, like, the black hoodie and just be, like, you know, she has a sense of occasion here. But also, like, when you said the thing about how, like, the whole thing about the game having a phone is just, like, a hat on a hat because A isn't just texting them anymore. Like, this is a hilarious moment of that as well, because A sent Aria a text telling her that something was down at the brew for her. Aria had to search high and low at the brew, found an envelope that contained these puzzle pieces, came over to the De Laurentiis house, put the puzzle pieces on the puzzle. The phone then gave her a message saying that her reward was behind her, and then she went over to the vase and found the file. So, like,
naturally.
What a hat on a hat on a hat.
Oh, my God. With a beret on top. Yeah.
Oh my goodness. Outside, an apartment door that apparently belongs to Mona, which we would never know because we've never been there before, Emily is waiting. Also, like, they're clearly, like, they don't have a lot of sets, so this is clearly, like, they just, like, kind of took, like, the apartment number off of, like, Prezra's old apartment door.
Yeah, it's clearly, like, Prezra's, the hallway from Prezra's apartment.
Yeah, like, they have, they've really done, like, nothing to spruce it up. Like, is she living in Prezra's old apartment? Maybe she is. Ezra, you know, Mona would probably like that. Like, ooh, you know, she probably, like, took some of the furniture as well. Like, ooh, Lyris have done things on this bed and this stove. Anyway, outside the apartment that apparently belongs to Mona, Emily is waiting. Mona is surprised to see her. I wish that Emily was like, what? We're a couple. We're sleeping together tonight. But no, that's not what's happening. Emily hands Mona the burner phone found at Spencer's, even though we have not seen Emily and Spencer interact at all since that happened, but whatever. Mona makes a remark about Caleb, and Emily says that Caleb and Hannah aren't answering their phones. Again, like, in Liar World, doesn't that seem alarming? Like, what if they're in police custody? What if they were kidnapped? But, you know, don't think about it. Anyway, Mona blows off Emily super hard, even when Emily is trying to tell her something about the donor info. Emily seems puzzled, but willing to chalk it up to kind of the general weirdness of Mona. I really feel like, well, Emily, you can't just expect to show up at somebody's door and have a booty call when you and the rest of the Liars have been super mean to Mona this entire episode. Come on. But Mona watches Emily go, and then we see, like, her very normal-looking apartment sort of morph into the office area, which includes a lot of lair-like elements. A printout of the board game, newspaper articles pinned up to the wall, and in the corner, the MacGuffins, a bunch of murdery-looking shovels. Love the Vander Jesus always being a step ahead. Also, I think this is meant to, like, be a moment, because we're going to, like, get to the next episodes where everyone's like, is Mona evil? Is Mona evil? And this is really, I think, meant to play that way. Is Mona evil? But, like, really, it's showing how far into the game she's already spiraled. Like, she told Hannah, don't make me play it.
Yeah.
And Hannah, like, really, like, rode right over that boundary. So this is, like, this is what happens when Mona interacts with this kind of stuff. And we're seeing it here on the walls of her apartment. And then that is the end.
Yeah, I really like the end of this episode. I love Mona, you know, like, Mona, who's always, like, showing up, and, like, the Liars are always like, go away, go away. I love the idea of a Liar chasing Mona down, because you know the Mona loves that too. And I really love that long shot of Mona looking through her peephole at, and Emily just sort of standing there and, like, looking back and just kind of slowly retreating. Like, it's just, it's filmed in a really cool way. And I, you know, I wish we got to see more of Mona's space, but I do like what we get to see of it here. It's a very cool apartment.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely agree. And I just like the sort of juxtaposition. Like, we always talk about, like, the, you know, mask of a face on your face of Mona.
Yes.
And so we see her, like, we see her, Mona is, like, kind of desperate to get back into her space. Like, she's had a long day of wearing the regular Mona mask.
And yeah.
She really wants to, like, get in here and get behind the computer and be like, you know, kind of get into the Mona as takes an A to beat an A type mode.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. We're getting a little bit more of Mona's interior life in this moment, however briefly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is super nice.
Yeah. So that is the episode. What are your final thoughts here?
Oh, I mean, I have not, like, changed my opinion that, like, a bunch of fans just won some random contest.
I agree. To, like, I agree.
Some scenes.
Yeah, I do think that this is better than some of the more recent episodes have been. There's just a little bit more interesting stuff going on, but it's still not, you know, that we're grading on quite the curve.
We are. I do think that, like, since we got to The Eye Abides, like, since then, the episodes have been ticking upward. Like, they've had a bit more momentum. They've had, like, a bit more stuff going on. they haven't been like, it hasn't been to the point of like, oh my gosh, how many more minutes are in this episode, as it was earlier in this kind of half season. But this episode was like, I mean, disjointed is like a pretty polite, pretty polite term for what it is. But let's just have just a second to say, like, why is Allison out of town? What?
Because they don't know what to do with Allison. They just don't know what to do with her. It's kind of like the rule of, like, you can't have Mona and Allison in the same episode for some reason. And you know, I mean, it could have been really interesting if Allison got to, like, confront the doctor at the end as well. Or, you know, if Allison was, like, maybe had a conversation with Hannah where they talked about, like, what does it mean to commit to your person after all these years of back and forth? Or if Allison and Spencer got to talk about, like, wow, it's so weird having parents that, like, have this really fucked up marriage dynamic. Like, what do you do with that? Like, there's so much that they could be doing with Allison that they're just not interested in exploring.
Well, and they have a whole, like, Allison and, like, evil auntie Mary Drake thing going on. But, like, now Mary Drake has completely been ceded over to Spencer's storyline. Like, now there's no more talk of Allison having, like, any skin in that game at all. But I will say that this episode actually, like, not to unfortunately bring up the perfectionists again, even though I'm about to do that. But this episode kind of, like, is a weird precursor to the point of, like, well, we can't have Allison and Emily. We'll just throw Mona in as, like, throw Mona in as, like, the extra undeclared queer.
Right. And she's just sort of around and, like, maybe she's gay, but we're not really going to say. Don't worry about it.
I've heard that she is definitely a lesbian. The show just isn't brave enough to say it. Word on the street.
She is a lesbian. I will not hear otherwise. Oh, exactly. My goodness. Well, next week is Choose or Lose, which is that the episode where Arya has the body banging around in the back of her car?
Ooh.
No, I think it ends with that. I think it ends with that happening.
It might be. I think that next week is the Mona figures out that Arya is being a sneak.
Also, Tanner is back.
Oh, I forgot that she returned. Well, that's nice.
Yeah. Why not?
Welcome back, Tanner.
Welcome back, Tanner. Do we have anything more that we want to say about Driving Miss Crazy?
Only that I really would have loved if, as we were looking over Mona's apartment, we saw the lair, and then we saw that in the closet she had that prison guard episode.
Oh my god!
A costume. She had, like,
that would be incredible.
Yeah.
Or, like, she, like, sits down, puts on some music, and it's Jailhouse Rock.
Yeah, that would have been fantastic as well.
I would have loved it. Well, if you have thoughts on this episode, maybe the gay dream space of the liars, we would love to hear from you. You can, of course, send us an email at everybodyapodcast@gmail.com. You can also check out our Instagram at everybodyapodcast. You can check out our Spotify, Everybody A, Everybody Gay. You can also send in a rating and review on iTunes. We would appreciate it. We're chugging towards the end here. Next week, we will be back with Choose or Lose. So until then.
Take care.